If you want me, call me on family phone. So Wayo told me, man. Congratulations. Then her head was pillowed on my stump, and I put right arm around her. What are you crying about, Wayo?
I'm not crying. I'm just frightened silly that you won't come back.
16. Woke up scared silly in pitch darkness. Manuel! Didn't know which end was up. Manuel! It called again. Wake up! That brought me out some. Was signal, intended to trigger me. Recalled being stretched on a table in infirmary at complex, staring up at a light and listening to a voice while a drug dripped into my veins. But was 100 years ago. Endless time of nightmares. Unendurable pressure. Pain. Knew now what no end is up feeling was. Had experienced before. Freefall. Was in space. What had gone wrong? Had Mike dropped a decimal point? Or had he given in to childish nature and played a joke, not realizing would kill? Then why, after all years of pain, was I alive? Or was I? Was this normal way for ghosts to feel? Just lonely? Lost? Nowhere? Wake up, Manuel! Wake up, Manuel! Oh, shut up, I snarled. Button your filthy king on ace. Recording went on. I paid no attention. Where was that reeking light switch? No. Doesn't take a century of pain to accelerate to Luna's escape speed at 3 gravities. Merely feel so. 82 seconds. But it's one time when human nervous system feels every microsecond. 3 G's is 18 grim times as much as a loony ought to weigh. Then discovered those vacuum skulls had not put arm back on. For some silly reason they had taken it off. When they stripped me to prepare me, and I was loaded with enough don't worry and let's sleep pills not to protest. No haha had they put it on again, but that Dracklick switch was on my left and sleeve of pea-suit was empty. Spent next 10 years getting unstrapped with one hand, then a 20-year sentence floating around in dark before managed to find my cradle again, figured out which was head end, and from that hint locate switch by touch. That compartment was not over 2 meters in any dimension. This turns out to be larger than old dome in freefall and total darkness. Found it. We had light. And don't ask why that coffin did not have at least 3 lighting systems all working all time. Habit, probably. A lighting system implies a switch to control it, nyet? Thing was built in 2 days. Should be thankful switch worked. Once I had light, cubic shrank to true claustrophobic dimensions, and 10% smaller. And I took a look at Prof. Dead, apparently. Well, he had every excuse. Envied him, but was now supposed to check his pulse and breathing, and such like, in case he had been unlucky and still had such troubles. And was again hampered, and not just by being one-armed. Grand load had been dried and depressured as usual before loading, but that cell was supposed to be pressured. Oh, nothing fancy, just a tank with air in it. Our pea suits were supposed to handle needs such as life's breath for those 2 days. But even best pea suit is more comfortable in pressure than in vacuum, and anyhow, I was supposed to be able to get at my patient. Could not. Did not need to open helmet to know this steel can had not stayed gas tight. Knew at once, naturally. From where pea-suit felt. Oh, drugs I had for proof, heart stimulants and so forth, were in field ampules. Could jab them through his suit. But how to check heart and breathing? His suit was cheapest sort. Sold for loony who rarely leaves Warren. Had no readouts. His mouth hung open, and eyes stared. A deader, I decided. No need to ex-proof beyond that old lineman. Had eliminated himself. Tried to see pulse on throat. His helmet was in way. They had provided a program clock, which was mighty kind of them. Showed I had been out 44+ hours, all to plan, and in 3 hours we should receive horrible booting to place us in parking orbit around Terra. Then, after 2 circums, Call it 3 more hours. We should start injection into landing program. If Puna ground control didn't change its feeble mind and leave us in orbit. Remind itself that was unlikely. Grain is not left in vacuum longer than necessary. Has tendency to become puffed wheat or popped corn, which not only lowers value but can split those thin canisters like a melon. Wouldn't that be sweet? Why had they packed us in with grain? Why not just a load of rock that doesn't mind vacuum? Had time to think about that and to become very thirsty. Took nipple for half a mouthful, no more, because certainly did not want to take 6 G's with a full bladder. Need not have worried. Was equipped with catheter, but did not know. When time got short, I decided couldn't hurt Prof to give him a jolt of drug that was supposed to take him through heavy acceleration. Then, after in parking orbit, give him heart stimulant. Since didn't seem as if anything could hurt him. Gave him first drug, then spent the rest of minutes struggling back into straps, one-handed. Was sorry I didn't know name of my helpful friend. Could have cursed him better. 10 G's get you into parking orbit around Terra in a mere 3.26 times 10 to the 7th microseconds. Merely seems longer. 10 gravities, being 60 times what a fragile sack of protoplasm should be asked to endure. Call it 33 seconds. My truthful word, I suspect my ancestress in Salem spent a worse half-minute day than made her dance. Gave Prof heart stimulant. Then spent 3 hours trying to decide whether to drug self as well as Prof for landing sequence. Decided against. All drug had done for me at catapulting had been to swap a minute and a half of misery and 2 days of boredom for a century of terrible dreams. And besides, if those last minutes were going to be my very last, I decided to experience them. Bad as they would be, they were my very own, and I would not give them up. They were bad. 6 G's did not feel better than 10. Felt worse. 4 G's, no relief. Then we were kicked harder. Then suddenly, just for seconds, in free fall again. Then came splash, which was not gentle, and which we took on straps, not pads, as we went in head first. Also, don't think Mac realized that after diving in hard, we would then surface and splash hard again before we damped down into floating. Earthworms call it floating, but it's nothing like floating in freefall. You do it at 1G, 6 times what is decent, and odd side motions tacked on. Very odd motions. Mac had assured us that solar weather was good, no radiation danger inside that Iron Maiden. But he had not been so interested in Earthside Indian Ocean weather. Prediction was acceptable for landing barges, and suppose he felt that was good enough. And I would have thought so too. Stomach was supposed to be empty, but I filled helmet with sourest, nastiest fluid you would ever go a long way to avoid. Then we turned completely over, and I got it in hair and eyes and some in nose. This is thing earthworms call seasickness, and is one of many horrors they take for granted. Won't go into long period during which we were towed into port. Let it stand that, in addition to seasickness, my air bottles were playing out. They were rated for 12 hours, plenty for 50-hour orbit, most of which I was unconscious, and none involving heavy exercise, but not quite enough with some hours of towing added. By time barge finally held still, I was almost too dopey to care about trying to break out. Except for one fact. We were picked up, I think, and tumbled a bit, then brought to rest with me upside down. This is a no-good position at best under one gravity. Simply impossible when supposed to A. unstrap self, B. get out of suit-shaped cavity, C. get loose a sledgehammer fastened with butterfly nuts to bulkhead, D. smash same against breakaways guarding escape hatch, E. bat our way out, and F. finally, drag an old man in a pea suit out after you. Didn't finish step A. Passed out, head downwards. Lucky this was emergency last resort routine. Stu Lejoie had been notified before we left. New services had been warned shortly before we landed. I woke up with people leaning over me. Passed out again. Woke up second time in hospital bed. flat on back with heavy feeling in chest. Was heavy and weak all over. But not ill, just tired, bruised, hungry, thirsty, languid. Was a transparent plastic tent over bed, which accounted for fact I was having no trouble breathing. I at once was closed in on from both sides. A tiny Hindu nurse with big eyes on one side, Steward Lajoie another. He grinned at me.
Hi, Kaber. How do you feel?
I'm right. But, oh, bloody. What a way to travel.
Prof says it's the only way. What a tough old boy he is.
Hold it. Prof said Prof is dead.
Not at all. Not in good shape. We've got him in a pneumatic bed with a round-the-clock watch and more instruments wired into him than you would believe. But he is alive and will be able to do his job. But truly, he didn't man the trip. He never knew about it, so he says. Went to sleep in one hospital, woke up in another. I thought he was wrong when he refused to let me wangle it to send a ship, but he was not. The publicity has been tremendous.
I said slowly, "You say Proof refused to let you send a ship?"
"I should say, Chairman Céline refused. Didn't you see the dispatches, Manny?"
"No. Too late to fight over it. But last few days have been busy."
"A dinkum word. Here, too. Don't recall when I last dosed."
"You sound like a loony."
"I am a loony, Manny. Don't ever doubt it."
But the sister is looking daggers at me." Stu picked her up, turned her around. I decided he wasn't all loony yet, but nurse didn't resent.
"Go play somewhere else, dear. I'll give your patient back to you, still warm, in a few minutes."
He shut the door on her and came back to bed.
But Adam was right. This was not only wonderful publicity, but safer.
"Publicity, I suppose. But safer? Let's not talk about it."
"Safer, my old. You weren't shot at. Yet they had 2 hours in which they knew right where you were, a big fat target. They couldn't make up their minds what to do. They haven't formed a policy yet. They didn't even dare not bring you down on schedule. The news was full of it. I had stories slanted and wetting. Now they don't dare touch you. You're popular heroes. Whereas, if I had waited to charter a ship and fetch you, well, I don't know. We probably would have been ordered into parking orbit, then you two, and myself perhaps, would have been taken off under arrest. No skipper is going to risk missiles no matter how much is paid. The proof of the pudding, Cobber. But let me brief you. You're both citizens of the People's Directorate of Chad. Best I could do on short notice. Also, Chad has recognized Luna. I had to buy one prime minister, 2 generals, some tribal chiefs, and a minister of finance. Cheap for such a hurry-up job. I haven't been able to get you diplomatic immunity, but I hope to, before you leave hospital. At present, they haven't even dared arrest you. They can't figure out what you've done. They have guards outside, but simply for your protection. And a good thing, or you would have reporters 9 deep shoving microphones into your face.
Just what have we done? That they know about, I mean. Illegal immigration?
Not even that, Manny. You never were a consignee, and you have a derivative Pan-African citizenship through one of your grandfathers. No, ha-ha. In Professor De La Paz's case, we dug up proof that he had been granted naturalized Chad citizenship 40 years back, waited for the ink to dry, and used it. You're not even illegally entering here in India. Not only did they bring you down themselves, knowing that you were in that barge, but also a control officer very kindly and fairly cheaply stamped your virgin passports. In addition to that, Prof's exile has no legal existence as the government that proscribed him no longer exists. And a competent court has taken notice. That was more expensive.
Nurse came back in, indignant as a mother cat.
Lord Stuart, you must let my patient rest.
At once, mon chéri.
Your Lord Stuart?
Should be Comte,
or I can lay a dubious claim to being the MacGregor. The blue blood bit helps. These people haven't been happy since they took their royalty away from them. As he left, he patted her rump. Instead of screaming, she wiggled it. Was smiling as she came over to me. Stu was going to have to watch that stuff when he went back to Luna. If did. She asked how I felt. Told her I was right. Just hungry. Sister, did you see some prosthetic arms in our luggage? She had, and I felt better with number 6 in place. Had selected it, and number 2, and social arm, as enough for trip. Number 2 was presumably still in complex. I hoped somebody was taking care of it. But number 6 is most all-around useful arm. With it, and social one, I'd be okay. 2 days later, we left for Agra, to present credentials to Federated Nations. I was in bad shape, and not just high G. Could do well enough in a wheelchair and could even walk a little, although did not in public. What I had was a sore throat that missed pneumonia only through drugs. Traveler's trots, skin disease on hands and spreading to feet. Just like my other trips to that diseased-ridden hole, Terra. We Lunas don't know how lucky we are, living in a place that has tightest of quarantines, almost no vermin, and what we have controlled by vacuum any time necessary. Or unlucky, since we have almost no immunities if turns out we need them. Still, wouldn't swap. Never heard word venereal until first went earthside and had thought come in cold was state of ice miner's feet. And wasn't cheerful for other reason. Stu had fetched us a message from Adam Selene. Buried in it, concealed even from Stu, was news that chances had dropped to worse than 1 in 100. Wondered what point in risking crazy trip if made odds worse. Did Mike really know what chances were? Couldn't see any way he could compute them, no matter how many facts he had. But Prof didn't seem worried. He talked to platoons of reporters, smiled at endless pictures, gave out statements, telling world he placed great confidence in Federated Nations and was sure our just claims would be recognized, and that he wanted to thank Friends of Free Luna for wonderful help in bringing true story of our small but sturdy nation before good people of Terra. F of FL being Stu. A professional public opinion firm, several thousand chronic petition signers, and a great stack of Hong Kong dollars. I had picture taken too, and tried to smile, but dodged questions by pointing to throat and croaking. In Agra, we were lodged in a lavish suite in a hotel that had once been palace of a Maharaja, and still belonged to him, even though India is supposed to be socialist. And interviews and picture-taking went on. Hardly dared get out of wheelchair, even to visit WC, as was under orders from Prof never to be photographed vertically. He was always either in bed or in a stretcher. Bed baths, bed pans, everything. Not only because safer, considering age, and easier for any loony, but also for pictures. His dimples and wonderful, gentle, persuasive personality were displayed in hundreds of millions of video screens, endless news pictures. But his personality did not get us anywhere in Agra. Prof was carried to office of President of Grand Assembly, me being pushed alongside, and there he attempted to present his credentials as ambassador to FN and prospective senator for Luna. Was referred to Secretary General, and at his offices we were granted 10 minutes with assistant secretary, who sucked teeth and said he could accept our credentials without prejudice and without implied commitment. They were referred to Credentials Committee, who sat on them. I got fidgety. Prof. Red Keats. Grain barges continued to arrive at Bombay. In a way, was not sorry about latter. When we flew from Bombay to Agra, we got up before dawn and were taken out to a field as city was waking. Every loony has his hole, whether luxury of a long-established home like Davis Tunnels, or rock still raw from drill. Cubic is no problem, and can't be for centuries. Bombay is bee swarms of people. Are over 1 million, was told, who have no home but some piece of pavement.
A family might claim right, and hand down by will, generation after generation, to sleep on a piece 2 meters long and one wide, at a described location in front of a shop. Entire family sleeps on that space, meaning mother, father, kids, maybe a grandmother. Would not have believed it if had not seen. At dawn in Bombay, roadways, side pavements, even bridges are covered with tight carpet of human bodies. What do they do? Where do they work? How do they eat? Did not look as if they did. Could count ribs. If I hadn't believed simple arithmetic that you can't ship stuff downhill forever without shipping replacement back, would have tossed in cards. But, Tanstoffel, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, in Bombay or in Luna. At last we were given appointment with an investigating committee, not what Prophet asked for. He had requested public hearing before Senate, complete with video cameras. Only camera at this session was its in-camera nature, was closed. Not too closed. I had little recorder, but no video. And took proof 2 minutes to discover that committee was actually VIPs of Lunar Authority, or their tame dogs. Nevertheless, was chance to talk, and proof treated them as if they had power to recognize Luna's independence and willingness to do so. While they treated us as a cross between naughty children and criminals up for sentencing. Prof was allowed to make opening statement. With decorations trimmed away, was assertion that Luna was de facto a sovereign state, with an unopposed government in being, a civil condition of peace and order, a provisional president and cabinet carrying unnecessary functions, but anxious to return to private life as soon as Congress completed writing a constitution, and that we were here to ask that these facts be recognized to jury, and that Luna be allowed to take her rightful place in councils of mankind as a member of Federated Nations. What Prof told them bore a speaking acquaintance with truth, and they were not where they could spot discrepancies. Our provisional president was a computer, and cabinet was Weil, Finn, Comrade Clayton, and Terence Sheehan, editor of Pravda, plus Wolfgang Kosakov, board chairman of Lunohoco, and a director of Bank of Hong Kong and Luna. But Wyo was only person now in Luna who knew that Adam Celine was false face for a computer. She had been terribly nervous at being left to hold fort alone. As it was, Adam's oddity in never being seen safe or over video was always an embarrassment. We had done our best to turn it into a security necessity by opening offices for him in Cubic of Authority's Luna City office, and then exploding a small bomb. After this assassination attempt, comrades who had been most fretful about Adam's failure to stir around became loudest in demands that Adam must not take any chances, this being helped by editorials. But I wondered while Prof was talking what these pompous chums would think if they knew that our president was a collection of hardware owned by Authority. But they just sat staring with chill disapproval, unmoved by Prof's rhetoric. Probably best performance of his life, considering he delivered it flat on back, speaking into a microphone without notes, and hardly able to see his audience. Then they started in on us. Gentleman member from Argentina, never given their names, we weren't socially acceptable. This Argentino objected to phrase former warden in Prof's speech. That designation had been obsolete half a century. He insisted that it be struck out and proper title inserted. Protector of the Lunar Colonies by appointment of the Lunar Authority. Any other wording offended dignity of Lunar Authority. Prof asked to comment. Honorable Chairman permitted it. Prof said mildly that he accepted change since Authority was free to designate its servants in any fashion it pleased and was no intention to offend dignity of any agency of Federated Nations. But in view of functions of this office, former functions of this office, citizens of Luna Free State would probably go on thinking of it by traditional name. That made about 6 of them try to talk at once. Somebody objected to use of word Luna, and still more to Luna Free State. It was the moon.
Earth's moon, a satellite of Earth and property of Federated Nations, just as Antarctica was. And these proceedings were a farce.
Was inclined to agree with last point. Chairman asked gentleman member from North America to please be in order and to address his remarks through chair.
Did chair understand from witness's last remark that this alleged de facto regime intended to interfere with consignee system?
Prof fielded that and tossed it back.
Honorable Chairman, I myself was a consignee. Now Luna is my beloved home. My colleague, the Honorable, the Undersecretary for Foreign Affairs, Colonel O'Kelly Davis.
Myself, huh?
Is Luna born, and proud of his descent from four transported grandparents. Luna has grown strong on your outcasts. Give us your poor, your wretched. We welcome them. Luna has room for them. Nearly 40 million square kilometers, an area greater than all Africa, and almost totally empty. More than that, since by our method of living we occupy not area but cubic, the mind cannot imagine the day when Luna would refuse another shipload of weary homeless.
Chairman said,
The witness is admonished to refrain from making speeches. The chair takes it that your oratory means that the group you represent agrees to accept prisoners as before?
No, sir.
What? Explain yourself.
Once an immigrant sets foot on Luna today, he is a free man, no matter what his previous condition, free to go where he listeth.
So, then what's to keep a consignee from walking across the field, climbing into another ship and returning here? I admit that I am puzzled at your apparent willingness to accept them, but we do not want them. It is our humane way of getting rid of incorrigibles who would otherwise have to be executed.
Could have told him several things that would stop what he pictured. He had obviously never been to Luna. As for incorrigibles, if really are, Luna eliminates such faster than Terra ever did. Back when I was very young, they sent us a gangster lord. From Los Angeles, I believe. He arrived with a squad of stooges, his bodyguards, and was cockily ready to take over Luna, as was rumored to have taken over a prison somewhere Earthside. None lasted 2 weeks. Gangster boss didn't make it to barracks. Hadn't listened when told how to wear a pea suit.
There is nothing to keep them from going home so far as we are concerned, sir,
Prof answered.
Although your police here on Terra might cause him to think.
But I have never heard of a consignee arriving with funds enough to buy a ticket home. Is this truly an issue? The ships are yours. Luna has no ships. And let me add that we are sorry that the ship scheduled for Luna this month was cancelled. I am not complaining that it forced on my colleague and myself.
Prof stopped to smile.
A most informal method of travel. I simply hope that this does not represent policy. Luna has no quarrel with you. Your ships are welcome. Your trade is welcome. We are at peace and wish to stay so. Please note that all scheduled grain shipments have come through on time.
Prof did always have gift for changing subject.
They fiddled with minor matters then.
Nosey from North America wanted to know what had really happened to the warden.
He stopped himself.
The protector. Senator Hobart.
Prof answered that he had suffered a stroke.
A coup is a stroke.
Huh.
And was no longer able to carry out his duties. But was in good health otherwise and receiving constant medical care.
Prof added thoughtfully that he suspected that the old gentleman had been failing for some time, in view of his indiscretions this past year, especially his many invasions of rights of free citizens, including ones who were not and never had been consignees.
Story was not hard to swallow. When those busy scientists managed to break news of our coup, they had reported Warden as dead, whereas Mike had kept him alive and on job by impersonating him. When Authority Earthside demanded a report from Warden on this wild rumor, Mike had consulted Proof, then had accepted call and given a convincing imitation of senility, managing to deny, confirm, and confuse every detail. Our announcements followed, and thereafter Warden was no longer available, even in his computer alter ego. 3 days later, we declared independence. This North American wanted to know what reason they had to believe that one word of this was true. Prof smiled most saintly smile, and made effort to spread thin hands before letting them fall to coverlet. "The gentleman member from North America is urged to go to Luna, visit Senator Hobart's sickbed, and see for himself. Indeed, all Terran citizens are invited to visit Luna at any time. See anything. We wish to be friends. We are at peace. We have nothing to hide. My only regret is that my country is unable to furnish transportation. For that, we must turn to you." Chinee member looked at Prof thoughtfully. He had not said a word but missed nothing. Chairman recessed hearing until 1500. They gave us a retiring room and sent in lunch. I wanted to talk, but Prof shook head, glanced around room, tapped ear. So, I shut up. Prof napped then, and I leveled out my wheelchair and joined him. On Terra, we both slept all we could. Helped. Not enough. They didn't wheel us back until 1600. Committee was already sitting. Chairman then broke on rule against speeches, and made a long one, more in sorrow than anger. Started by reminding us that Luna Authority was a non-political trusteeship, charged with solemn duty of ensuring that Earth's satellite, the Moon, Luna, as some called it, was never used for military purposes. He told us that Authority had guarded the sacred trust more than a century, while governments fell and new governments rose. Alliances shifted and shifted again. Indeed, Authority was older than Federated Nations, deriving original charter from an older international body. And so well had it kept that trust that it had lasted through wars and turmoils and realignments. This is news, but you see what he was building towards. "The Luna Authority cannot surrender its trust," he told us solemnly. "However, there appears to be no insuperable obstacle to the Luna colonists, if they show political maturity, enjoying a degree of autonomy. This can be taken under advisement. Much depends on your behavior. The behavior, I should say, of all you colonists. There have been riots and destruction of property. This must not be." I waited for him to mention 90 dead goons. He never did. I will never make a statesman. I don't have high-level approach. "Destroyed property must be paid for," he went on. "Commitments must be met. If this body you call a Congress can guarantee such things, it appears to this committee that this so-called Congress could, in time, be considered an agency of the authority for many internal matters. Indeed, it is conceivable that a stable local government might, in time, assume many duties now falling on the Protector, and even be allowed a delegate, non-voting, in the Grand Assembly. But such recognition would have to be earned. But one thing must be made clear. Earth's major satellite, the Moon, is by nature's law forever the joint property of all the peoples of Earth. It does not belong to that handful who by accident of history happen to live there. The sacred trust laid upon the Lunar Authority is, and forever must be, the supreme law of Earth's Moon." "Accident of history? Huh?" I expected Prof to shove it down his throat. I thought he would say, no, never did know what Prof would say. Here's what he did say. Prof waited through several seconds of silence, then said, "Honorable Chairman, who is to be exiled this time?" "What did you say?" "Have you decided which one of you is to go into exile? Your deputy warden won't take the job." This was true. He preferred to stay alive. "He is functioning now only because we have asked him to. If you persist in believing that we are not independent, then you must be planning to send up a new warden." "Protector." "Warden," let us not mince words. Though if we knew who he is to be, we might be happy to call him ambassador. We might be able to work with him. It might not be necessary to send him with armed hoodlums to rape and murder our women.
Order! Order! The witness will come to order!
It is not I who was not in order, Honorable Chairman. Rape it was, and murder most foul. But that is history, and now we must look to the future. Whom are you going to exile?
Prof struggled to raise self on elbow, and I was suddenly alert. Was a cue.
For you all know, sir, that it is a one-way trip. I was born here. You can see what effort it is for me to return even temporarily to the planet which has disinherited me. We are outcasts of Earth who...
He collapsed. Was up out of my chair and collapsed myself, trying to reach him. Was not all play-acting, even though I answered a cue. It's terrible strain on heart to get up suddenly on Terra. Thick feel grabbed and smashed me to floor. 17.
Neither of us was hurt, and it made juicy news breaks. For I put recording in Stu's hand, and he turned it over to his hired men. No were all headlines against us. Stu had recording cut, edited, and slanted. Authority to play odd man out? Lunar ambassador collapses under grilling. Outcasts, he cries. Prof. Paz points finger of shame. Story, page 8.
Not all were good. Nearest to a favorable story in India was editorial in New India Times inquiring whether authority was risking bread of masses in failing to come to terms with lunar insurgents. Was suggested that concessions could be made if would ensure increased grain deliveries. Was filled with inflated statistics. Luna did not feed 100 million Hindus, unless you choose to think of our grain as making difference between malnutrition and starvation. On other hand, biggest New York paper opined that authority had made mistake in treating with us at all, since only thing convicts understood was taste of lash. Troops should land. Set us in order. Hang guilty. Leave forces to keep order. Was a quick mutiny, quickly subdued, in Peace Dragoon's regiment from which our late oppressors had come. One started by rumor that they were to be shipped to Moon. Mutiny not hushed up perfectly. Stu hired good men. Next morning a message reached us inquiring if Professor De La Paz was well enough to resume discussions. We went, and committee supplied doctor and nurse to watch over Prof. But this time we were searched, and a recorder removed from my pouch. I surrendered it without much fuss. Was Japanese job supplied by Stu, to be surrendered. Number 6 arm has recess intended for a power pack, but near enough size of my mini recorder. Didn't need power that day, and most people, even hardened police officers, dislike to touch a prosthetic. Everything discussed day before was ignored, except the chairman started session by scolding us for breaking security of a closed meeting. Prof replied that it had not been closed so far as we were concerned, and that we would welcome newsmen, video cameras, a gallery, anyone, as Luna Free State had nothing to hide. Chairman replied stiffly that so-called Free State did not control these hearings. These sessions were closed, not to be discussed outside this room, and that it was so ordered. Proof looked at me. Will you help me, Colonel? I touched controls of chair, scooted around, was shoving a stretcher wagon with my chair toward door before Chairman realized bluff had been called. Prof allowed himself to be persuaded to stay without promising anything. Hard to coerce a man who faints if he gets overexcited. Chairman had said there had been many irrelevancies yesterday, and matters discussed best left undiscussed, and that he would permit no digressions today. He looked at Argentino, then at North American. He went on.
Sovereignty is an abstract concept, one that has been redefined many times as mankind has learned to live in peace. We need not discuss it. The real question, Professor, or even Ambassador de facto, if you like, we shan't quibble, the real question is this. Are you prepared to guarantee that the lunar colonies will keep their commitments?
What commitments, sir?
all commitments, but I have in mind specifically your commitments concerning grain shipments.
I know of no such commitments, sir, Prof answered with bland innocence.
Sherman's hand tightened on gavel, but he answered quietly,
Come, sir, there is no need to spar over words. I refer to the quota of grain shipments, and to the increased quota, a matter of 13% for this new fiscal year. Do we have your assurance that you will honor those commitments? This is a minimum basis for discussion. Else, these talks can go no further.
Then I am sorry to say, sir, that it would appear that our talks must cease.
You aren't being serious.
Quite serious, sir. The sovereignty of Free Luna is not the abstract matter you seem to feel it is. These commitments you speak of were the authority contracting with itself. My country is not bound by such. Any commitments from the sovereign nation I have the honor to represent are still to be negotiated.
Rabble, growled the North American. I told you were being too soft on them. Jailbirds, thieves and whores. They don't understand decent treatment.
Order.
Just remember I told you. If I had them in Colorado, we would teach them a thing or two. We know how to handle their sort.
The gentleman member will please be in order.
I'm afraid, said Hindu member, Parsee, in fact, but committeeman from India. I'm afraid I must agree in essence with the gentleman member from the North American Directorate. India cannot accept the concept that the grain commitments are mere scraps of paper. Decent people do not play politics with hunger.
And besides, the Argentino put in, they breed like animals, pigs.
Prof made me take a tranquilizing drug before that session, had insisted on seeing me take it. Prof said quietly, Honorable Chairman, may I have consent to amplify my meaning before we conclude, perhaps too hastily, that these talks must be abandoned?
Proceed.
Unanimous consent, free of interruption? Chairman looked around.
Consent is unanimous, he stated, and the gentlemen members are placed on notice that I will invoke Special Rule 14 at the next outburst. The sergeant-at-arms is directed to note this and act.
The witness will proceed.
I will be brief, Honorable Chairman. Prof said something in Spanish. All I cut was Señor. Argentino turned dark but did not answer. Prof went on.
I must first answer the gentleman member from North America on a matter of personal privilege, since he has impugned my fellow countrymen. I, for one, have seen the inside of more than one jail. I accept the title, nay, I glory in the title of jailbird. We citizens of Luna are jailbirds and descendants of jailbirds. But Luna herself is a stern schoolmistress. Those who have lived through her harsh lessons have no cause to feel ashamed. In Luna City, a man may leave purse unguarded or home unlocked and feel no fear. I wonder if this is true in Denver. As may be, I have no wish to visit Colorado to learn a thing or two. I am satisfied with what Mother Luna has taught me. And rabble we may be, but we are now a rabble in arms. To the gentleman member from India, let me say that we do not play politics with hunger. What we ask is an open discussion of facts of nature, unbound by political assumptions false to fact. If we can hold this discussion, I can promise to show a way in which Luna can continue grain shipments and expand them enormously to the great benefit of India. Both Cheney and Indian looked alert. Indian started to speak, checked himself, then said,
Honorable Chairman, will the chair ask the witness to explain what he means?
The witness is invited to amplify. Honorable Chairman, gentlemen members, there is indeed a way for Luna to expand by tenfold, or even 100, her shipments to our hungry millions.
The fact that grain barges continue to arrive on schedule during our time of trouble, and are still arriving today, is proof that our intentions are friendly. But you do not get milk by beating the cow. Discussions of how to augment our shipments must be based on the facts of nature, not on the false assumption that we are slaves, bound by a work quota we never made. So which shall it be? Will you persist in believing that we are slaves, indentured to an authority other than ourselves? Or will you acknowledge that we are free, negotiate with us, and learn how we can help you?
Gentleman said,
In other words, you ask us to buy a pig in a poke. You demand that we legalize your outlaw status. Then you will talk about fantastic claims that you can increase grain shipments 10 or 100-fold. What you claim is impossible. I am an expert in lunar economics, and what you ask is impossible. It takes the Grand Assembly to admit a new nation. Then place it before the Grand Assembly. Once seated as sovereign equals, we will discuss how to increase shipments and negotiate terms. Honorable Chairman, we grow the grain. We own it. We can grow far more, but not as slaves. Luna's sovereign freedom must first be recognized.
Impossible, and you know it. The Lunar Authority cannot abdicate its sacred responsibility.
Prof sighed. It appears to be an impasse. I can only suggest that these hearings be recessed while we all take thought. Today our barges are arriving, but the moment that I am forced to notify my government that I have failed, they will stop.
Prof. Seth sank back on pillow, as if it had been too much for him, as may have been. I was doing well enough, but was young and had practice in how to visit Terra and stay alive. A loony his age should not risk it. After minor foo-foo-rah, which Prof ignored, they loaded us into a lorry and scooted us back to hotel. Once underway, I said, Prof, what was it you said to Senior Jellybelly that raised blood pressure? He chuckled.
Comrade Stewart's investigations of these gentlemen turned up remarkable facts. I asked who owned a certain brothel off Calle Florida in B.A. these days, and did it now have a star redhead?
Why? You used to patronize it?
I tried to imagine Prof in such.
Never. It has been 40 years since I was last in Buenos Aires.
He owns that establishment, Manuel, through a dummy, and his wife, a beauty with titan hair, once worked in it.
Was sorry I'd asked.
Wasn't that a foul blow? And, undiplomatic?
But Prof closed eyes and did not answer.
He was recovered enough to spend an hour at the reception for newsmen that night, with white hair framed against a purple pillow and thin body decked out in embroidered pajamas. Looked like VIP corpse at an important funeral, except for eyes and dimples. I looked mighty VIP, too, in black and gold uniform, which Stu claimed was Lunar diplomatic uniform of my rank. Could have been, if Luna had had such things. Did not, or I would have known. I prefer a pea suit. Color was tight. Nor did ever find out what decorations on it meant. A reporter asked me about one, based on Luna at Crescent as seen from Terra. Told him it was a prize for spelling. Stu was in earshot and said, The Colonel is modest. The decoration is of the same rank as the Victoria Cross, and in his case was awarded for an act of gallantry on a glorious, tragic day of— He led him away, still talking. Stu could lie standing up almost as well as Prof. Me, I have to think out the lie ahead of time. Indian newspapers and casts were rough that night. Threat to stop grain shipments made them froth. Gentilest proposal was to clean out Luna, exterminate us as criminal troglodytes, and replace us with honest Hindu peasants who understood sacredness of life and would ship grain and more grain. Prof picked that night to talk and give handouts about Luna's inability to continue shipments and why. and Stu's organization spread release throughout Terra. Some reporters took time to dig out sense of figures and tackle proof on glaring discrepancies.
Professor De La Paz, here you say that grain shipments will dwindle away through failure of natural resources, and that by 2082, Luna won't be able to feed its own people. Yet earlier today you told the Lunar Authority that you could increase shipments a dozen times or more.
Prof said sweetly. That committee is the Lunar Authority?
Well, it's an open secret.
So it is, sir. But they have maintained the fiction of being an impartial investigating committee of the Grand Assembly. Don't you think they should disqualify themselves, so that we could receive a fair hearing?
It's not my place to say, Professor. Let's get back to my question. How do you reconcile the two?
I'm interested in why it's not your place to say, sir. Isn't it the concern of every citizen of Terra to help avoid a situation which will produce war between Terra and her neighbor?
War? What in the world makes you speak of war, Professor?
Where else can it end, sir, if the Lunar Authority persists in its intransigence? We cannot accede to their demands. Those figures show why. If they will not see this, then they will attempt to subdue us by force, and we will fight back. Like cornered rats, for cornered we are, unable to retreat, unable to surrender. We do not choose war. We wish to live in peace with our neighbor planet, in peace and peacefully trade. But the choice is not ours. We are small. You are gigantic. I predict that the next move will be for the Lunar Authority to attempt to subdue Luna by force. This peacekeeping agency will start the first interplanetary war.
A journalist frowned.
Aren't you overstating it? Let's assume that the Authority, or the Grand Assembly, as the Authority hasn't any warships of its own, let's suppose the nations of Earth decide to displace your, government. You might fight on Luna. I suppose you would. But that hardly constitutes interplanetary war. As you pointed out, Luna has no ships. To put it bluntly, you can't reach us.
I had chair close to Prof. Stretcher, listening. He turned to me. Tell him, Colonel. I parroted it. Prof and Mike had worked out stock situations. I had memorized and was ready with answers. I said, Do you gentlemen remember the Pathfinder? How she came plunging in out of control? They remembered. Nobody forgets greatest disaster of early days of spaceflight, when unlucky Pathfinder hit the Belgian village. We have no ships, I went on, but would be possible to throw these barge loads of grain instead of delivering them into parking orbit. Next day this evoked the headline, Loonies threatened to throw rice. At moment it produced awkward silence. Finally, journalists said,
Nevertheless, I would like to know how you reconcile your two statements. No more grain after 2082, and 10 or 100 times as much.
There is no conflict, Prof answered. They are based on different sets of circumstances. The figures you have been looking at show the present circumstances, and the disaster they will produce in only a few years through drainage of Luna's natural resources. Disaster which these authority bureaucrats, or should I say authoritarian bureaucrats, would avert by telling us to stand in the corner like naughty children. Prof paused for labored breathing, went on. The circumstances under which we can continue, or greatly increase our grain shipments, are the obvious corollary of the first. As an old teacher, I can hardly refrain from classroom habits. The corollary should be left as an exercise for the student. Will someone attempt it? Was uncomfortable silence. Then a little man with strange accent said slowly,
It sound to me as if you talk about way to replenish natural resources.
Capital. Excellent.
Prof flashed dimples. You, sir, will have a gold star on your term paper. To make grain requires water and plant foods. Phosphates, other things. Ask the experts. Send these things to us. We'll send them back as wholesale grain. Put down a hose in the limitless Indian Ocean. Line up those millions of cattle here in India. Collect their end product and ship it to us. Collect your own night soil. Don't bother to sterilize it. We've learned to do such things cheaply and easily. Send us briny seawater, rotten fish, dead animals, city sewage, cow manure, offal of any sort, and we will send it back, ton for ton, as golden grain. Send 10 times as much, we'll send back 10 times as much grain. Send us your poor, your dispossessed. Send them by thousands and hundreds of thousands. We'll teach them swift, efficient lunar methods of tunnel farming and ship you back unbelievable tonnage. Gentlemen, Luna is one enormous fallow farm. 4,000 million hectares, waiting to be plowed. That startled them. Then someone said slowly, But what do you get out of it? Luna, I mean. Prof shrugged. Money, in the form of trade goods. There are many things you make cheaply which are dear in Luna. Drugs, tools, book films, gods for our lovely ladies. Buy our grain, and you can sell to us at a happy profit. A Hindu journalist looked thoughtful, started to write. Next to him was a European type who seemed unimpressed. He said, Professor, have you any idea of the cost of shipping that much tonnage to the moon? Prof waved it aside. A technicality. Sir, there was a time when it was not simply expensive to ship goods across oceans, but impossible. Then it was expensive, difficult, dangerous. Today you sell goods half around your planet almost as cheaply as next door. Long-distance shipping is the least important factor in cost. Gentlemen, I am not an engineer, but I have learned this about engineers. When something must be done, engineers can find a way that is economically feasible. If you want the grain that we can grow, turn your engineers loose. Prof gasped and labored, signaled for help, and nurses wheeled him away. I declined to be questioned on it, telling them that they must talk to Prof when he was well enough to see them. So they pecked at me on other lines. One man demanded to know why, since we paid no taxes, we colonists thought we had a right to run things our own way. After all, those colonies had been established by Federated Nations, by some of them. It had been terribly expensive. Earth had paid all bills. And now you colonists enjoy benefits and pay not one dime of taxes. Was that fair? I wanted to tell him to blow it. But Prof had again made me take a tranquilizer, and had required me to swat that endless list of answers to trick questions. Let's take that one at a time, I said. First, what is it you want us to pay taxes for? Tell me what I get, and perhaps I'll buy it. No, put it this way. Do you pay taxes? Certainly I do, and so should you. And what do you get for your taxes? Huh? Taxes pay for government. I said, Excuse me, I'm ignorant. I live my whole life in Luna. I don't know much about your government. Can you feed it to me in small pieces? What do you get for your money? They all got interested, and anything this aggressive little chum missed, others supplied. I kept a list. When they stopped, I read it back. Free hospitals. Aren't any in Luna. Medical insurance. We have that, but apparently not what you mean by it. If a person wants insurance, he goes to a bookie and works out a bet. You can hedge anything for a price. I don't hedge my health. I'm healthy. Or was till I came here. We have a public library. One Carnegie Foundation started with a few book films. It gets along by charging fees. Public roads. I suppose that would be our tubes. But they are no more free than